doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Wednesday, December 21st, 2005. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Ryan Muse of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, Senate Ag Committee Chairman Saxby Chambliss is pointing to his own political party and the president for failure to extend commodity programs in the FY 2006 appropriations bill. And U.S. beef, it's what's for dinner and breakfast in Japan, at least in limited quantities. I'll have details of these and other stories this half hour. And later, Drew Lerner will be by with a look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Wednesday prices settled like this at Kansas City. March wheat at 371.5 down 3. At the Chicago Board of Trade, March wheat 327.5 down a half. May 337 down a quarter. March corn 210 up a quarter. May 219 up a quarter. July 227.75 up a half. September 235.75 unchanged. January soybeans 606.5 up 1.25. March 619 up 2.5. July 633.5 up 1. November 633.5 down 3 quarters. January soybean meal $2.90 up 3.10. January soybean oil 21.22 down 9. On the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, January feeder cattle 114.07.5 down 97.5. December live cattle 95.50 down 112.5. And February lean hogs 65.27.5 up 12.5 on the day.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities. He is in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave. We certainly wish Paul a speedy recovery today and a merry Christmas.
Thanks much. I think Paul under the weather today with laryngitis. We thank you for filling in today. An interesting day at the Chicago Board of Trade because for much of the day it was a weaker market, but then we bounced off those lows and actually in the nearbys posted positive gains today. How do we read those?
Well, we think it's probably the same five or six factors that have been present ever since the bean rally took over. And you know, we've kind of felt like, Dave, this past week or two, going into Christmas, especially in beans, that the beans were probably going to lead the corn and wheat to a lesser degree, and that the corn and wheat guys are really going to watch the bean pit more than anything. But, you know, you've got really strong cash meal demand on a strong basis, and that's clearly due to your livestock feeding. You've also got the energies and the currencies and the fund-related buying mindset, the index funds coming in, moving portfolios, rebalancing portfolios. You've got the technicals on the weekly chart that kind of kick-started this whole idea that maybe we could get a little bit of upside started. We've not been fought by wheat, which is something that's been a long time coming. We noted that the new crop July wheat futures is up 22.5 cents in the last 12 calendar days. So really nice move in the wheat, and that's not, you know, bearing down and holding the beans back. And then we've obviously got the Argentine weather that's contributing to this, but I guess we view Argentina not as the dominant force of why this rally occurred. It's been a supportive factor and a supportive feature, no doubt about it, but it's no less than that. And so I guess we saw the crude oil, the natural gas turn around. We saw the dollar start to come off its highs and weaken up a little bit. Meal kick started and the beans turned around as a result.
Certainly, farmers seem to be taking advantage of this little bit of rally. We've seen the basis get a little bit sloppier in the last day or two.
Yeah, we have. It's going to be the funds versus the fundamentals, kind of a clash of the Titans type mindset. We think that the next 3 weeks, maybe even all the way into the first quarter. We sent an email up to our good friends up at EFG, and they have a very good pulse on what's going on up on the floor. And we said, give us some factors going into the close, what you see as what's turning this market today since the opening and since that, you know, the lack of follow-through selling after the opening. And they noted the softer cash basis levels just like you did on the cash, and that brought in a lot of sellers on rallies. Hedge-type selling was noted as well on yesterday's trade especially. Now, Canada did announce a wider spread and use of ethanol in its fuel. That missed us, but that must have gotten picked up by the trade today because that was on their little note sheet. And then there's also some mixed views starting to come out on the short-term forecast for South America. Some are saying wetter, some are saying drier for the Argentine areas that are starting to need the rain pretty good.
That March corn contract ending the day at 210, up a quarter, but it was down under its 50-day moving average ever so briefly today. Is the 212 upside resistance a very difficult one to attempt to get through?
It is, unless you have the funds, you know, pulling you higher in the beans, and you don't have the desire by the short funds to you know, not cover anymore in the wheat complex, which the commodity trading funds have been so short. But today, that March corn is an important point, and you bring that up well. We really saw a neat market and price action develop here. We were pretty negative on commodity week last week on the March and how it closed because of the really soft move and the fact that the cash market was starting to see a little bit more bushels. And it has looked fairly lethargic this week so far, but it's interesting to note that we now have 2 days in a row and a close above the 50-day moving average in March, and we needed that given the fact that Friday's market was so weak. And one other thing that might help producers out there right now, we've kind of got a line in the sand, a good line in the sand in our opinion, on the March corn as far as where do you make catch-up sales of old crop, especially you're needing cash flow. We are back above the 10-day moving average of 207 even. We would say if you close back below that, you might really want to take a look at, you know, letting some more cash go, because you will then have lost both your 50-day moving average support and your 10-day moving average support, and that may mean quite a lot to the technical people and also the commercials out there as well. So you might want to keep that on your radar screen, that 10-day moving average on March corn.
What do you think about December corn at 246 as a hedging opportunity and perhaps some calls on top of that?
We're not quite there yet. You know, one of the things that we've really been looking as a leading indicator is the natural gas market, and right behind that, the November bean market and the November bean futures. We really feel like the natural gas has carved out a low at around 1340 to 1350, basis the January futures. If that low holds, Dave, and we also try and explore the 640 to 650 level in November beans on maybe a push back up to that gap that Chuck was talking about this morning, in the March beans and in the March meal, if we want to go ahead and drive the bus all the way into that gap, then maybe the November beans will kick it into a 650, 655 range. That would equate to us to more like a 255 to 260 D's corn sale. So we kind of want to sit and wait and watch all these things happen, especially once we come back from the Christmas and New Year holiday.
USDA December cattle on feed estimate, the average guess placed in November 114.6. If that were to come true, that of course be a little bit bearish in the cattle pit. But I'm wondering, does it give a pop to corn?
Well, that's a very good point. And the on feed number, looking at such a large number and the double digit expectations and increases in November placements, certainly gives you that idea, and we'd have to say they're probably already trading that in the cattle after today's price action. It sure looked like a day of trading expectations, and a lot of it was based upon the estimates that came out. The other thing that came out today was we had $96 cash cattle trade in Texas and Kansas markets. That disappointed traders who really wanted 97 and 98 trade going into the Christmas holiday.
So has the helium come out of the feeder cattle live cattle balloon at this point?
Well, it may have for the next 30 to 60 days, but is it over and done with? No, we don't think so, because we do see a real ratcheting up of demand, especially if the dollar weakens. I think that's probably what's going to make or break this market in the bigger picture and the longer cycle mindset for both hogs and cattle, Dave, is if we do get a sideways to lower dollar action, we're looking at pretty good growth coming out of Asia and GDP numbers. And, you know, like our U.S. housing starts numbers were very, very good yesterday. Surprised a lot in the trade, surprised us. You know, the financial markets are starting to feel like, hey, maybe we can endure these kind of crude oil prices and energy prices and still have 4-plus% growth in the U.S. and 9-10% in China, and you know, 8, 7, 8 in South Korea, and you know, 5 to 6 in China, in Japan. So those kind of growth numbers say that beef and pork demand is going to stay pretty good, especially if the dollar does too.
Thanks much, Mike.
You bet, Dave. Take care.
Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will be joining us for a look at agricultural weather. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's two-state forecast tonight, clear to partly cloudy with areas of fog in the north and central sections, lows ranging from 12 in the far north to 25 in the south. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, windy and milder. Highs ranging from 34 in northeastern Indiana to 52 degrees in southwestern Illinois. In agricultural news, Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Saxby Chambliss, a Republican from Georgia, says the unwillingness of House leaders, President Bush, and Agriculture Secretary Mike Johanns to extend commodity programs as part of the FY06 budget reconciliation bill will cause a big problem when it comes time to write the next farm bill.
While the baseline is preserved for some conservation programs through extension in the law, the House Agriculture Committee opposed similar treatment for commodities. This final package contains a short-term reprieve from cutting crop payments, means commodities will not be protected like conservation during reauthorization. This will be a big problem for farmers as Congress begins to write the Farm Bill in 2007.
That view was shared by Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Thad Cochran, and Cochran adds the brunt of more than $2.7 billion in farm spending cuts in the 2006 appropriations bill will fall on conservation and rural development.
Unfortunately, the House leadership decided that there should be no reductions in the commodity title and that all of the reductions should basically come out of conservation and a few other grant programs that we have in rural development and firefighting and whatnot. I just think that was wrong.
And National Farmers Union President Dave Fredrickson says the congressional ag cuts is a lump of coal in the stockings of ag producers in the days leading up to Christmas.
In their haste to pass legislation before the holidays, members of Congress are not behaving as if this is the season of giving. These cuts contain slashes to vital programs that help our nation's farmers and ranchers produce a safe, abundant supply of agricultural goods.
Senator Tom Harkin, a Democrat from Iowa, said in a floor speech Tuesday the situation was, in his words, a classic bait and switch, because U.S. trade negotiators said at the trade ministerial meeting in Hong Kong that they favor switching the farm bill from commodity supports to conservation and rural development, but back home support cutting those very programs. Meanwhile, the Illinois State Agriculture Director is blaming U.S. House leadership for the removal of $1.6 billion in disaster aid from a final defense spending bill. Chuck Harkey wonders at the silence of U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert, whose Northern Illinois district, Harkey says, was as hard hit as any in the state. Harkey says relief is absolutely necessary to allow some farmers to survive.
I do believe that there are individuals who have suffered greatly. Not everyone, and I'd be the first to admit it. The yields around the counties were roller coaster, but some of those who were hit hard could at least afford it.
Harkey says another attempt to pass disaster assistance next spring might come too late for some farmers. He notes the latest statistics shows the average farm income fell by half this year from $90,000 to $45,000. Harkey says without insurance payments on crop losses and off-farm income, many farmers would go under. But Iowa GOP Senator Chuck Grassley says wide-scale ag disaster relief for Midwest growers simply may no longer be necessary. He says the impact of this summer's drought just was not as bad as anticipated.
to some extent, what we anticipated as I was going through the cornfields of Jackson County and Clinton County, 1st of August, that it seems to me that we were getting reports from eastern Iowa, and even what I read in the paper, some people in northern Illinois evidently got more corn than what they anticipated, and rains came along to help beans, so they weren't quite as bad off. So I don't have a firm assessment of just exactly what that need is.
And according to Grassley, his fellow farm state senators have not been calling for Midwest ag disaster aid.
In the summer, talking to senators in Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, and maybe Indiana, I was hearing a lot of talk about those senators saying about the need for drought relief, and I haven't heard it a lot lately. But when there's a firm assessment made, there's opportunities in the future, albeit now in 2006, for that to be considered.
But Tuesday afternoon, both senators from Illinois, Democrats Barack Obama and Dick Durbin, did call for Midwest ag disaster aid and vowed to fight for it when Congress reconvenes in 2006. Grassley says ag disaster aid could be a possibility next year if further assessment shows a need. China this week recomputed its gross domestic product, this time including information on the economic activity of individual consumers, not just manufacturers. The new figures are attention-getting. Chinese government economists now estimate that China's GDP was 16.8% larger in 2004 than previously estimated. The new figure moves China to the sixth largest global economy last year instead of seventh, putting the Chinese economy ahead of Italy, but just behind France. Canadian Wheat Board says it is exploring avenues to obtain refunds of duties paid on sales of wheat to U.S. customers. Those duties, first imposed in 2003, recently were ruled unacceptable by a panel convened under the backing of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Trade observers expect the U.S. will soon announce that it is dropping the tariff, but whether refunds will be forthcoming remains to be seen. American beef made a small but significant appearance on grills in Japan on Monday, signaling what U.S. producers hope will be a successful return to what once was their most lucrative overseas market. The feasts at a private party in Tokyo and a chain of barbecue restaurants in western Japan followed limited meat shipments that began last weekend. And this morning, representatives of Japan's food industry dined on U.S. beef. On hand was a surprise guest, Chicago White Sox second baseman Tadahito Iguchi, who said his power in the batter's box comes from U.S. beef. U.S. beef still faces an uphill struggle in Japan, where consumers are especially sensitive to safety concerns. The National Cotton Council may be the least satisfied U.S. farm group in the aftermath of the WTO ministerial meeting in Hong Kong. Stuart Doan of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting reports.
In an exclusive interview, NCC President Mark Lang argued the WTO text agreed to in Hong Kong offers virtually nothing for the U.S. cotton industry and expects everything in return.
The big concern is the bracketed text that shows up in this agreement that calls for a more ambitious reductions in domestic support for cotton and earlier implementation of whatever is agreed to for cotton. It's going to be very difficult for the U.S. to probably get that kind of language out of any text. I'm afraid we're in a difficult situation as negotiations move forward.
According to Lang, the current WTO text contains no concrete hope for improved market access for U.S. cotton, as it implies that China won't be required to open its market to more imports. I'm Stuart Doan reporting.
And the Senate took quick action and confirmed the president's nomination of Richard Crowder as USTR chief agricultural negotiator this past weekend. U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman on Tuesday praised Crowder's confirmation. Portman says Crowder has a unique understanding of domestic and international agricultural issues. Portman says the insight Crowder brings, and these are his words, will be crucial in helping to unlock the agricultural deadlock at the WTO. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Wyatt Amuse of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Wyatt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Has this pop that we've seen in soybeans over the last few sessions at the Chicago Board of Trade brought producers to your neck of the woods to drop off?
Yeah, there has been a little bit of grain pricing over the past week. A lot came out once the January hit that $6 mark. We're currently bidding option price on beans, so what the January futures are setting at is exactly our cash price, and I think that was kind of a magic number that a lot of people thought about during fall harvest. They said, well, if beans could just get back to $6, I'd sell them. So we had several open offers and a little bit of settling down here today. I think if we can bump that up maybe another 20 cents in the 625 range, we could probably see a little bit more come out.
What about the corn? Are you seeing any corn sales?
A little bit of corn. Our cash corn right now is 204, so, I mean, that's pull out a little bit, but mostly people are kind of holding off until we get into the new year and seeing what's going to happen. I know higher input costs are really really a big concern for a lot of guys, and they're thinking that the board's going to have to buy acres, so to speak, in order to get these prices up and encourage people to actually grow corn.
Let me ask you this. With the big LDPs that we saw this fall, what kind of timing delay, would producers be able to do as opposed to a typical year where there was not an LDP? In other words, in terms of pulling triggers, mm-hmm. How much more delay is there?
Well, I understand right where you're getting at. Today, the LDP is 14 cents on corn, a good 30 cents down from where it had been. Let's just say the fall average LDP was about 45 cents. That's just about 20 to 25% of the value of corn. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, carrying yourself 25% of the way of what a cash sale would get you. So a lot of people were able to pay off operating loans and maybe even prepay some of their chemical and seed because of the LDP this fall. But I don't know that it's causing people to hang on too much longer. You know, we've seen about a 30-cent appreciation in cash corn over the past 3 months, or, you know, 2.5 months anyway, since harvest. And I think people are hanging on a little bit longer, but at the same time, we should keep in mind that the flat price is what it comes down to, and 204 right now for cash corn and 206 for January is not a bad spot to be selling. When you combine your LDP in there, you're in the 250 range, and I think that's a good amount to be at, and maybe say thank you much and start concentrating on next year.
And your prices today?
Cash corn 204, fall 06 corn 230. Cash soybeans are 606, our fall beans 617.
Thanks very much, Wyatt.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dave.
Wyatt Amuse of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. And in about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Governor Rod Blagojevich has named a former Illinois State University administrator to the ISU Board of Trustees, pending state Senate approval. Betty Kinzer of Normal retired in August after 30 years as an administrator, instructor, and advisor at ISU. She's also been active in McLean County Democratic Party politics and ran unsuccessfully for county board last year. ISU President Al Bowman says Kinzer's varied background would add a unique insight to the governing board. The jury in the federal corruption trial of former East St. Louis Police Chief Ron Matthews has found him guilty on all counts. Matthews was accused of plotting to shield an auxiliary officer from a possible criminal probe and deportation after the volunteer was found to be a felon in possession of a firearm. A sentencing hearing has been set for March 20th. The U of I's National Center for Supercomputing Applications is one of thousands of sites around the country helping to connect families with loved ones in the military. The center is offering video conferencing links for military families today in cooperation with the nonprofit Freedom Calls Foundation. More than 50 family members have scheduled video conference calls with their loved ones at two military camps in Iraq. A one-time aide to George Ryan says he heard the former Illinois governor give lobbyist Ron Swanson confidential information that the southern Illinois town of Grayville was picked as the site for a state prison. Matthew Bettenhausen today testified about the exchange at Ryan's federal fraud trial in Chicago. Prosecutors say Swanson parlayed that information into a $50,000 lobbying fee for lobbying for Grayville as the prison site, even though the town was already chosen. Republican Mike Delf has been sworn in today as an Indiana state senator. Delf was recently chosen by a party caucus in Senate District 29 to replace Murray Clark of Indianapolis, who resigned to take a law firm job. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, are we seeing some net drying ahead for Brazil?
Oh, my. Maybe not so bad for Brazil as much as it will be for Argentina, but southern Brazil will probably see some drying for a while, but I really don't think there's too much that's wrong with Brazil's weather. I think we're looking pretty good. We've had some excessive rains in northern portions of the country this week, and there's been, more importantly, it's been persistently cloudy and daily showers occurring in portions of Minas Gerais and a couple of neighboring states like Goiás and portions of São Paulo. These areas all produce soybeans. They've all had this persistent cloudy, cool, and wet condition, so the soybean crop is not moving along very well at this point and does need to see greater sunshine and warmer temperatures. There's a little bit of dryness down in far southern sections of Brazil, but I don't believe that it is the seed of anything terribly bad for a while. We've got plenty of subsoil moisture across those southern areas, and it looks like a combination of some timely rain Friday and Saturday of this week and the slightly cooler temperatures will come into play to help get us through the next full week of weather without running into any moisture stress. The situation in southern Brazil is one that will support some additional drying perhaps in the second week of the two-week forecast, and it's probably sometime in the second week of January where we might run into some problems down in Rio Grande do Sul and some of the neighboring southernmost sections of the country. But I think for the next 2 weeks we're going to be doing fairly well in that nation.
You mentioned dryness in Argentina, southern Cordoba, La Pampa, northwestern Buenos Aires, Santa Fe, all dry areas. Are they going to get any relief?
Does not look like the main oil seed production area is going to get the relief, no. I think that the area has an opportunity for a few showers off and on over the next 2 weeks, but temperatures are going to be in the 80s and 90s, and the amount of rain that falls will be very infrequent and light, probably looking at less than maybe 3/4 of an inch of rainfall over this first week of the forecast, and there's some models out there saying that there won't be any precipitation in the second week, and if that verifies, the stress level in some of these crop areas will likely become excessive. We are very dry, very short on moisture across the area you just mentioned, including, again, northwestern Buenos Aires, southern Cordoba, southern Santa Fe, and neighboring La Pampa. These are all grain and oilseed producing areas in Argentina, and it looks to me at this point that with La Nina developing, the odds are fairly good that dryness in at least a portion of Argentina will be with us through a big part of the summer season.
Let's take it back to the U.S. Midwest, and let me ask you this. What do the latest Palmer Index charts show about the recharging of soil moisture here?
Well, most of the Palmer indices are long-term trend changers, so they don't usually respond to short-term precipitation events like we've seen in the recent weeks. So most of the Palmer indices are all suggesting that we are pretty much status quo with a huge long-term dryness event underway across many areas from Nebraska through Iowa into parts of Illinois and an even larger area evolving down in the Delta. These two areas are of great concern in long-term forecasting. We'll keep a very close eye on them during the course of the winter coming up. The odds are very much stacked against some of these areas getting adequate relief before we get into spring. Now, I put that in quotes, the adequate relief part, because there will be precipitation in these areas. We will see some improvement in topsoil moisture, but the long-term moisture deficits that we have built up over the past year are not going to be completely eliminated. And with La Nina around, we're not going to do real well with precipitation during the winter and early spring, and that's going to put us at odds of some more dryness in the spring of 2006. So we do want to watch both of these areas again very closely as we move forward through the next 2 or 3 months.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a great day.
Drew Lerner, Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. This is Dave Dickey.
.37 Central Time. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. 30 degrees in Urbana. Let's check in now with Scott Moe of A.G. Edwards in Champaign for the latest on Wall Street. Scott?
The major stock averages have retreated from earlier highs but are still holding on to gains following 4 days of losses. The Dow has been up as much as 95 points on the combination of earnings and merger news. NASDAQ's been up as much as 19 on its highs of the day. Technology, biotech, and banks are among today's leaders. Richmond Federal Reserve President Jeffrey Locker said the economy growth is on solid footing after the government reported third quarter gross domestic product rose at 4.1%. The gross domestic product has expanded by at least 3% for 10 straight quarters. That's the longest run since 1986. Currently, New York advanced decline is 3-2 positive in issues and volume. The Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,831. That's up 25 points and just over 1.3 billion shares trading hands so far today. Transports are at 4,189. That's up 86. Utilities are down 4 points at 408. And the NASDAQ's currently up 5 at 2,228. We have 1,878 advancing issues, 1,404 declining with 162 issues unchanged on the day. On the interest rate front, the January bond closed at 112 and 23 30 seconds. That was down 3.16, brings the long bond yield to a 4.67. Oil closed at $58.57 a barrel. It was up 1 cent. And the London afternoon gold fix is at $494.50 an ounce. That's down $7.60. Once again, the Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,831. That's up 25 points on the day. This is Scott Moe with A.G. Edwards in Champaign. Have a good afternoon.
Today's programming is made possible in part by grants from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign and Crossroads Global Handcrafts, 428 North Main in Bloomington, offering a collection of products from more than 30 third world countries, from Vietnamese ceramics and textiles to Bolivian musical instruments and international home decor.
Get the drift on This Moment of Science. We've discussed before how endangered species are at risk from the increased likelihood of inbreeding, which leads to unhealthy offspring. But there's another danger to letting the numbers of animals in a given species become too low. It's called genetic drift. Genetic drift is the term biologists use to describe the gradual loss of certain genes from a species, genes that may have been very important for that species' survival. How can animals lose genes? It's kind of like reaching into a bag of M&Ms. If you take out 100 M&Ms, you are sure to get all the colors at least once. If you only take out 10, you may well miss a color. And if by chance you haven't missed a color, try it again. Very soon, you will come up with, say, no reds. Every time animals mate, their offspring receives a mixed bag of genes, half from its mother and half from its father. If the father and the mother share many of the same genes, their offspring will receive doubles of some of them. The doubles don't help and they mean that some other gene that could have been passed on wasn't. Think of the M&Ms. At the point where you fail to pull a red out of the bag, you have lost one gene. If your mate doesn't have that gene either, then your descendants will never have it. Low populations of animals means less genetic variation –